Wipe out, 1, 2, 3, 4!
Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and the alt-right have captured headlines. For more than a year now, vandalism has escalated to demonstrations, shootings, to terrorism. And some say the election of Donald Trump has given them new power in mainstream politics. But surely, that's an American phenomenon, right? With no traction in Canada. Well, a new documentary looks at the extreme right here in Canada and pokes holes in the illusions of a Canadian complacency. Documentary is called Skinhead. It tells the story of a former skinhead and white supremacist named Brad, his beliefs, and what led him to abandon his ideology. Skinhead is written and directed by award-winning documentary filmmaker Andrew Gregg, whom I've interviewed here twice before. The show is available now online and will be broadcast on CBC Docs POV this Sunday at 9 p.m. And I'm very pleased to have Andrew Gregg here in studio to tell us more about Skinhead.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So, especially since Donald Trump was elected, people have talked a lot about the alt-right. What is the alt-right?
I think that the alt-right is just a rebranding of good old-fashioned white supremacism. It came out of right after the election of Donald Trump. There's a fellow named Richard Spencer who's sort of been the evil princeling of the far-right movement in the United States. He came up with the term, or he takes credit for the term, alt-right. What they've tried to do is package their message into something that's more palatable for millennials. So rather than wearing the swastika t-shirts and the Doc Martens and the bomber jackets, they wear fancy suits or they wear chinos and polo shirts. And but make no mistake, it's exactly the same thing. Even though they've changed their language and their look, what they're talking about is white nationalism. And their message is that the white race is in danger because of immigration. So they always have to have the sort of the straw man they hold up there as a target to justify their hate. And what it is these days is immigration.
Now, they dress, as you say, in chinos and polo shirts, but what we want to talk about also is skinheads who would wear the jeans, the Doc Martens, and the very specific tops along with the shaved heads. Can you talk to me about a particular skinhead named Brad and how you met him?
What we wanted to do was look at a film about how do we talk about the rise of the ultra-right under Trump, because it has exploded. I mean, you weren't seeing Charlottesville under Obama. We wanted to get a certain point of view. I was talking to Dr. Barb Perry, who's at the University of Ontario Institute of Tech out in Oshawa. She's Canada's leading hate crime expert. And I said, well, here's what I want to do. And she says, well, you got to get in touch with Brad. He's been in touch with me. He's doing his undergrad in criminology. So I got in touch with him. It was tentative at first. He is reinventing his life like so many of these people do. And I should stress right now, the saving grace about white supremacist movements is almost everybody leaves. And Brad is one of these people that's left. He left about almost 6 years ago now, but when I met him, it was more like 5 years ago. He agreed to do a doc, but the first thing he said is, I don't want to be portrayed as a victim. I don't want to be portrayed as somebody that was hoodwinked. You know, he went in with his eyes open, even though he was recruited. And in my personal belief is that he was recruited into a cult, or a cult-like organization. And he stayed for 13 years. But, he doesn't want to be portrayed as a victim. He wants to show that you can get out, that those years of your life that you spend in these movements, you never get back, and that you're wounded. You're wounded at the end of it.
And how was he radicalized?
He grew up in Toronto, regular kid, a single child, regular kid, played hockey, skateboarded, but never fit in, was never on the hockey team, even though he played hockey, but he was never the captain of the hockey team, never in the cliques in school, started getting into trouble, was a brawler. And was one of these people that was sort of an outsider looking for a place to belong. And this is what the recruiters look for. They look for these young men who are just looking for something to fit into. And the guy that recruited him was somebody that Brad actually knew. And he said, yeah, come with me to this concert on Saturday night. And they go and they're buying him beer, slapping him on the back. And, you know, and he starts thinking, wow, I'm accepted here. And the next thing they know, he knows, they hand him a copy of Mein Kampf, which is literally what happened. And he found what he felt was a place, like I said, to belong. And it's that sense of belonging that they get, how they get their hooks into you.
So distinctly Canadian racists, such as Proud Boys and Paul Frum, could you talk about its manifestation in Canada before we talk about the U.S.?
I think, you know, it's got a long history here. The Klan was involved in the West. There was a Klan rally in Smiths Falls in the 50s. You couldn't win an election in Manitoba in the 30s unless you were involved with the Klan somehow. And then fast forward to the 80s, we had one of the only real homegrown neo-Nazi groups in Canada. Most of them are branch plants of the States. Heritage Front with Wolfgang Droga, who some people might remember here.
Yeah.
He was eventually murdered.
Zundel.
Ernst Zundel was a Holocaust denier that was deported from Canada. Jim Keegstra, Terry Long, who tried to start a sort of a right-wing white commune.
Christie, the lawyer that defended them all.
Yeah. So you've got all these, you know, you've got all these different people, but it went quiet for a while. Paul Frum is still around, and he sort of is sort of the last of the old guard voices. But with this reemergence of the right, you know, it's taking in Canada. There are, by Barb Perry's estimate, over 100 different ultra-right-wing groups now active in Canada.
And I saw just a couple months ago, stone's throw away in Queen's Park, a bunch of Proud Boys and with buses of protesters brought in by Paul Frum, just over there in Queen's Park, worshiping some guy on a horse. I'm not sure what the statue thing was about.
They were upset about on Canada Day, a group of Mi'kmaq Indians went to and had a demonstration in front of the statue of Cornwallis
in Halifax,
and a bunch of Proud Boys showed up and interrupted that. And that they were trying to carry that on. They were trying to get momentum from it. The one thing that I think is really important to mention right now is that since Charlottesville in August in Virginia, when Heather, I can't remember her last name, but she was killed when a white wing supremacist drove his car in.
The Unite the Right rally.
None of their rallies have gotten any traction. Like, you know, ever since then, a lot of these people that might have been fence sitters like Brad was when he was young, they're not going to come out anymore. One of the main reasons is because of the advent of cell phones. People take pictures of who they are and put them online and their bosses fire them. So that seems to be discouraging them. It might not change their minds philosophically. A lot of these guys live online.
And another Canadian link is Gavin McGinnis, former writer for
one of the founders of Vice. And McGinnis will tell you that he's not a white supremacist, but his group that he started called the Proud Boys, they call themselves Western chauvinists. They don't believe in feminism. They have weird rules like you can't masturbate. But, you know, regardless of what McGinnis says, I've been to a number of rallies in the United States and Canada in the last year, and the Proud Boys are always there, and they're walking side by side with the Three Percenters and the Oath Keepers, people that are seen by the Southern Poverty Law Center in the States as white supremacist groups. So I think it gets past the point where Gavin McGinnis is allowed to even determine or describe whether his group is white supremacist or not. That's who it's drawing. And they wear their own uniform, black Fred Perry shirts with Fred Perry, by the way, the clothing company. Yeah, that's what skinheads used to wear. Yeah. And the Fred Perry company is disavowing them. But they have a uniform. And that's, you know, the Proud Boys have a uniform. They wear Make America Great hats, the black Fred Perry
shirts with yellow stripes,
chinos. And so, you know, for whatever Gavin McGinnis wants to say, the Proud Boys, I think it's fairly safe to say, are a white supremacist group. When they say Western chauvinist, I think you can interpret that as white.
I'm speaking with Andrew Gregg about Skinhead, a documentary on CBC Docs POV. Your documentary takes an unusual turn when it goes south into the States, not to a place I would expect to be a hotbed of racism or white supremacists. I'm talking Portland, Oregon, like Portlandia.
I know, Portlandia. Well, I think that the connection is that Brad, whose story is what we're telling, he moved out to British Columbia from Toronto and then eventually got involved with a Portland-based white supremacist gang called Volksfront. He became the Canadian chapter head. So not only was he in this movement, but he was a leader of the movement. And he was going back and forth to Portland all the time. So we thought, well, let's go down to Portland and see what's going on there. And Portland has been the scene of an awful lot of quote-unquote free speech rallies since Trump came in.
Free speech rally.
It's a bunch of right wingers who have come up with a title that they think is benign, but it's not. But what it means to them is they call them pro-Trump free speech rallies. But what they're really trying to do, in their own words, is win back the Pacific Northwest from what they see as encroaching liberalism. So that idea of Portlandia really offends them. And when you look at the history of the Pacific Northwest, you know, it was one of those places where after the Civil War, a lot of soldiers from both sides disappeared. It was a place where you could go and reinvent yourself. In recent times, we had the Bundy family that moved onto federal land and tried to claim it as their own. You know, that's a very sort of a militia attitude. And but more importantly, I think there's two things that are important to know about Portland. In 1988, there was a group of skinheads there called East Side White Pride. They murdered an Ethiopian student named Mulugata Sarah. They beat him to death with a baseball bat. It was a hate crime. The three guys involved went to prison, and Ken Mishki, the main culprit, died in prison actually recently. So there was that. And then as these rallies started to happen more and more this year in Portland, another guy named Jeremy Christian, who was showing up, Sieg Heiling, wearing swastika shirts, he started harassing these two women of color on transit in Portland. And when three men, white men, stood up to stop him, he stabbed all three of them, killing two of them.
It's a terrible case. It made papers worldwide.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable violence, right? And the people in Portland are going, you know, what do we have to do to get rid of this stigma? But Portland has a long history of segregation and racism. When I was doing research, I went on a civil rights bus tour there. That's amazing. You go around and they show you the examples of where this happened against Japanese during the Second World War, where it happened to blacks who moved there to work in shipyards during the Second World War, and then the murder site of Mulugata Sarah. So Portland has this history, and there's a little sidebar in there you'll see in the film. For the longest time, there was a restaurant in Portland called Coon's Chicken Inn with a giant head of a caricature of the classic sort of racist view of a Negro, and you'd walk in through his mouth. That was open until the late 50s. So if you're a person of color going to a place like Portland, maybe you and I don't realize it, but the message is clear. If you're a minority. And I think we tried to show that side of the fence too, not just that this stuff exists and is now flourishing again, but the message that it sends to people of color or the LGBTQ community that you're not wanted and we're coming for you.
Brad in Toronto had a sea change, if you want, when his gang got in a fight in Parkdale with a Vietnamese gang. Could you talk about that and how that changed?
I think it was a sea change, but it was a sea change that he tamped down because it caused conflict for him. He was around looking for trouble in Parkdale, was drunk, saw two Vietnamese guys standing on the corner, got in a brawl with them, beat them up because Brad, he was a fairly capable brawler. And then 20 or 30 other guys came out of a karaoke bar and beat the hell out of him. And he ended up in the hospital. This was life-threatening stuff. He lost a lot of blood. When he came to, he realized the surgeon working on him was Jewish. And an Orthodox Jewish doctor. And he thought, this guy's not going to save me. And of course, the surgeon did. And Brad, he found himself at a crossroads. Do I get out of this now and realize that it's nuts? Or is the brotherhood more important to me now? And the brotherhood was more important to him, so he tamped it down. Later on, when he left the movement, he looked back at that moment and realized that it was seminal for him. And when you talk to him about, you know, the different points in his time in the movement, as we say, that's one of the big, big moments where he just is full of regret. And he'd like to find that doctor, but he hasn't been able to.
And finally, what do you think Canadians should look out for, beware of when it comes to the far right in Canada?
I think there's a couple of levels of it. But I think, you know, there's this there's this postering that's been going on. Hey, white people, or it's okay to be white. You know, it might look benign if you see a sign that says okay to be white. These are entryways. These are people trying to get you out to their rallies. There's a guy here in Toronto that's been trying to start have a number of right wing rallies. Just most recently, the beaches where nobody shows up. And that's what's happening these days, that you'll get – it happened in Boston last weekend. You might get 50 ultra-right people and 2,000 counter-protesters. So I think it's important to not be complacent. And the other thing, too, is watch what your kids are looking at online, especially if you've got little boys. Just make sure that it's easy to find these white supremacist sites.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me, Andrew. Andrew Gregg's new documentary, Skinhead, is showing this Sunday on CBC Docs POV. Look out for that one. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.